Welcome to episode 120 of the Sports Geek podcast. This week, I chat with Jeremy Butler about transforming the Sale Sharks with digital and data.
Welcome to the Sports Geek podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who has attended MLB games in 10 MLB stadiums, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. 10 MLB ballparks. I do keep a list of all the ballparks that I've been to. Major League Baseball, of the big four in the US, is far and away, way out in front, primarily because I come to the US most summers, or I have the last four, and this will be the fifth, for C Conference. So 10 is the number, and in my trip going forward, I'm about to take off recording this in Melbourne before I take off on July 4th. I'm hoping to go to the Chicago Cubs, to Wrigley Field, which I have been before, so I will not add to the tally. But I'm also hoping to go to the White Sox, to a White Sox game, which will add to the tally, and also the Blue Jays when I'm in Toronto. So that tally will be increased in the next couple of weeks when I am in the US. And my name is Sean Callinan, the host of the Sports Geek podcast. You may be listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or my favorite podcast app, Pocket Cast. Please let me know. I'd love to know where and when you do listen to the podcast. I know I do get some feedback that I'm a bit inconsistent in my publishing schedule, and I do apologize for that. This little thing called work and clients get in the way, which is a good outcome. And that's the idea behind Sports Geek Podcast, is to help me get more work and work with more people. But unfortunately, sometimes the podcast does suffer for that. But I'm heading to the US on July 4th, as I said, Chicago. I'll be in Chicago for a week. If any of my listeners are in Chicago, if you're listening to this, I will be in Chicago by the time you're listening to this. Please hit me up. I've set up special Calendly accounts, Calendly links. If you haven't used Calendly.com, it's a great meeting booking tool. If you go to Calendly.com/Sean Callinan, you'll see all the ways that people can book, either for a client meeting or a coffee catch up, and the like, and it all syncs back to my calendar. So if you go to, and I've set up some secret links in my Calendly for my visits. So if you go to calendly.com/Sean Callinan/Chicago or Toronto or Denver or Vegas, you'll be able to see the spots that I've got available to catch up. And I've put it really wide. If you want to catch up for a coffee in the morning, if you want to catch up for a beer late at night, I'm always happy to meet up with people who listen to the podcast and work in the world of sports. I'm really looking forward to catching up with a few different people in those four cities, and then obviously finishing it off at SEAT. So in Chicago for the Podcast Movement Conference, PM16, I think, is the hashtag if you want to follow that along. It's going to be July 6, 7, 8, looking at all things, you know, connecting with a whole bunch of podcasters from around the world, which will be really interesting. And then SEAT Conference in Las Vegas, SEAT Vegas 16. Is the hashtag for that one. And I'm sure I'll be catching up with a lot of good friends and former guests and future guests at SEAT. So looking forward to going there. Please let us know if you're going to attend either of those conferences. And please, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm really going to be driving this over the next couple of weeks while I'm in the US, please join our Sports Biz Slack community. We've set up a specific channel for the SEAT conference. So if you are going and you're in the Sports Biz Slack community already, let me know. We'll add you. I'm really looking forward to helping more people connect. I was really pleased to see the IRL, the In Real Life channel, seeing people connecting in New York when I'm sitting in my office in Melbourne. So really great. There's about 370 people in the community now, sharing on multiple platforms and topics. So please join up if you haven't already, and just use it on your phone. The Slack app on your phone is a terrific experience, and yeah, as I said, great way to connect. So go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack to join up. And one of those people who's in the Sports Biz Slack community is my guest today, longtime listener from the Sale Sharks. I'm not going to get James to edit that out. I want you this to be raw and unedited. Jeremy Butler, who's GM of the Sale Sharks, has been a long-time listener of the podcast, and he's soon going to be moving to Australia. So I caught up with him when he was out in Melbourne and checking out things and talking to prospective people about employment opportunities. And when he went back home, we caught up for an interview. So here is my chat with Jeremy Butler from the Sale Sharks. Very happy to have a Sports Geek podcast listener and a good mate that I met up with in Melbourne just recently, all the way back in his hometown of Manchester. Jeremy Butler, General Manager of the Sale Sharks, welcome to the Sports Geek podcast.
Good morning.
The podcasts are timeless, Jeremy. They can be listened at any time of the day. So it's a bit wrong to say good morning, good afternoon, or good night on a podcast. But thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah, exactly. It's time agnostic podcasting. You've been at the Sale Sharks since about April 2015. Am I right there that you were appointed at the Sale Sharks then?
That's correct. I'd had a stint as chief executive at a football club in England, which was sold, and moved across to rugby, which is a rugby union, which is a game I have a lot of passion for. So I hooked up with the Sale Sharks in Manchester.
So tell listeners a little bit about the Sale Sharks, both what they about the club, where they're positioned in I guess the UK sports landscape, and what it was like when you came in.
Sale Sharks is one of only 12 Premiership rugby clubs in England. We won the league in 2006, won the Premiership in 2006. And we actually recently have been sold to new owners. There's rugby union is quite a prominent sport in the UK and across Europe, but we sit in an area of Manchester which is not renowned for rugby. We've got a lot of competition on our doorstep from rugby league, and of course the big football clubs Manchester United and Manchester City. So we're a slight challenger brand in our own environment. But have been successful on the field. Off the field, we had to move stadiums a few years ago for minimum standards, have moved into a fantastic new facility, but one that's in an area that's not much infrastructure in place, and that's been a real issue of ours. But it's a well-supported club, a really strong brand in rugby, and a club that with the new owners that have come in literally a few weeks ago, we'll be looking for top four rugby in the next few years, if not this season.
So I saw that you were sort of brought in with the instructions to modernise and restructure the commercial and operational departments for the Sale Sharks. What were some of your first steps in that space?
Probably the biggest eye-opener was the lack of data, the lack of knowledge of where the data was and what we could do with the data. It's a club where there's been a tremendous amount of change. I think there've been 10 chief execs in 12 years. So a lot of things have been started and put down. A lot of different opinions have come in. So somebody would, as I found out, I turned off our CRM system 2 years before because they've been told to stop spending so strongly in certain areas. So the biggest and the first thing I focused on and the biggest thing was just trying to organise the data. Which meant trying to take data from several sources. I mean, we were running on Excel spreadsheets, no CRM. The website wasn't mobile optimized, hadn't been worked on for 4 or 5 years. So what I attempted to do initially was to give the website a bit of branding, so we had a strong brand optimized in the marketplace, and then start working with the data, getting the CRM turned back on, and trying to give the data a clean, because a lot of it was quite old, segment it correctly, and start establishing some good communications with our supporters.
So that's a really good point. I speak to a lot of either clubs or NSOs that don't really undervalue that data piece. I keep saying data or data; it works either way. And it is that aggregation of all different sources that you do have. Excel is a bit of a dirty word in the CRM space, but it still gets used a lot just for analysing your own data and things like that. So was it just a matter of finding all the pieces, going getting all the ticketing information, going getting all the corporate hospitality information, going getting all the entries that you might have run on different competitions? Was that really the first task of trying to get all that data into one source?
Well, the first task was actually winning over the board and the chief executive and convincing him that spending this money was the only way that we could achieve the goals that had been set. And the goal was to start increasing ticket sales, potentially having a sellout stadium. One of the issues we have is our TV arc faces the wrong stand. So our most popular stand is not seen on TV. So we're televised through Sky and BT Sport across Europe, and the busiest stand is not seen. I'm a firm believer that if you fill your stadium is the first platform, it's the foundation. If you're filling your stadium, you'll attract more interest from sponsors, more corporates will come along, there's a better feel factor, more players want to come to play for you. So those are the things that the board were very keen to have. But initially, you do need to put some funding in place if you want to put the structures, get the plumbing done, so we can actually move forward. And part of that piece was getting the CRM turned back on and investing in some knowledge as well as some of the tools, just some knowledge we didn't have in the business. And then you're right, it was going around people that had left the business over the past two or three years, getting into their Excel sheets and trying to collate and pull all this data together. And it was quite a mighty task.
So from a back-end point of view, the people might be listening and wondering, was there a specific tool or a CRM that you went with?
We use a company called Sports Alliance. And the main reason we use them, and they've been great, but I'll be honest, the main reason we used them was because they had the CRM. We'd worked with them previously. So they had all the data, they had all the information in place, and it was a lot quicker just to get that turned back on, get that deduped, get that work through, than trying to go to another company, tender processes. So we spoke to Sports Alliance again and renewed the partnership, and that's been very productive for us.
And so tell us a little bit about your background in how you got into the world of sport and into more of a GM executive type role.
I initially started my life as a sports journalist, which is I ran a company called Press Pass for 20 years, founded and ran that working for national newspapers in the UK, the BBC Online, Reuters, and having done the work and interviewed the star names, the Beckhams of the world over the years, I got to a stage where I wanted to be challenged in a different area. I went away and did a business degree on the side and was speaking to club executives, just understanding what the sports business was like, understanding how you work in an environment that generally doesn't make money, because as we know, a lot of sports clubs generate revenue and that's simply paid out on wages to the players in the hope that would generate more revenue. So I got a lot of background knowledge and then had an opportunity to go to Tranmere. It was my first experience for a sports club. Again, a club in an area that was a bit of a challenger, two big clubs on their doorstep, which was Liverpool and Everton. A lack of resource because there was an owner that wanted to sell, having funded the club for 20 plus years. And that was my first experience. I went in there and the guys were working on computers of XP, trying to design an XP. So it was quite an eye-opener. And that kind of... That was the opener for me. I learned a lot there in a short space of time, as you do when there's a lot of crisis management in play. And that set me up nicely to go into Sales Sharks, having a clear understanding of the silos that need to be worked through, and also having a clear set of criteria in my mind of where I needed, knowing we needed to go to and the processes we needed to follow quickly to gain the quick wins. With obviously the eye on the big prize, which is hitting all the budget targets.
And do you think that journalistic background sort of gave you a bit of a leg up in understanding the, I guess, the storytelling that that teams need and that the Sales Sharks needed to sort of retell their story to say, this is what we're now doing, we're going from here, and then also that focus on, you know, you've already mentioned the website and being able to deliver content to the fans and then, you know, accessing them and reaching them via social media. You thought that, do you think that was a really important part of, I guess, your philosophy of what's a successful sports club look like these days?
I think it was key because if you, we all talk about data and CRMs and systems and how we're engaging and segmentation, but unless you're serving up quality content, people won't become engaged. You can send as many messages as you want, but unless you have some compelling story, some compelling video, something that grabs attention or satisfies, sates the needs of the sports fan, they're not going to become engaged with you. So having a journalistic background, knowing what people want to read, knowing what interests people, and knowing how to present that in the correct way, in an exciting way, in an easily digestive format, I think that's been quite key because we managed to rapidly increase our Twitter, our Facebook and Twitter, both up 20-30%. Our engagement rate, our open rates on the emails have all increased rapidly because we're giving people what they want to see and what they want to hear.
And from the other thing is you know, especially in a really a cluttered market and being that challenger brand, you can use those channels to get directly to those Sales Sharks fans that do want that info and then start building on that fan base.
Yeah, so we've got the Sales Sharks rugby fans that we want information in a timely matter. They kind of want to know what's happening, what the coaches are saying, what the players are saying. But then we're also using some of the content, we're trying to reach other markets. We need to grow our database, grow our fan base. And we're lucky. We're a very family orientated sport. Rugby union's got a great reputation, especially in England, for discipline, good core values, discipline, respect. It's a sport that parents want their children to be involved with and understand. Football or soccer over here has had some, not scandals to the extent that I've probably seen overseas, but does have an image problem at times. Whereas we're a nice, clean sport. And one of the things that we saw studying the World Cup data, the Rugby World Cup was held in England in 2015, was the buying pattern and the huge increase in the mums who are buying tickets for children. And we've seen that also in our database, our behavioural patterns, in that we know that a lot of mums are looking for things for their children, their young boys and girls to do. And we're seen as a nice, clean family entertainment. We do a lot of work around junior supporters and also around getting kids involved in playing sport. So it's a nice, healthy environment for parents to come into. But that's then trying to go to a different marketplace rather than just saying the coach believes this will happen on the pitch. It's trying to get a message across, which can be done through some diet advice, some coaching advice, these kind of issues, just trying to attract mums in a different marketplace. And again, that's where hopefully a journalistic eye has helped, because we've been able to go into those markets and we've understood what we need to be saying and how we say it.
And it's also a little bit that you've looked at different customer journeys to how they can become a fan, how they can become engaged with the Sales Sharks. Was that something that you sort of went, when you started, you said, oh, here is our core, these are the fans that, you know, are with us through thick and thin? But like you said, looking at the data from the World Cup 2015 and obviously riding off the wave of that and the success of that in England, doing things like working out the customer journey for you're an 8 to 12 year old boy or girl and you want to follow rugby, what's that customer journey look like? What's the journey look like for a mum? How do you get the mums and families involved in the Sales Sharks? Did you go through sort of mapping out some of those customer journeys to figure out what content you could serve to them and how you could start having those touch points to get them involved with the Sales Sharks?
We're lucky in that we have a very good community team at Sales Sharks, which has got 17 members who are out in the community. So we've got some really good touch points. So a lot of the mapping is done through guiding people into the community program, which then is more of a soft sell, which I think people are more comfortable with. Talk about the values of rugby. I think the biggest customer journey, the work that I undertook when I went in was buying tickets. The platform to actually buy tickets is Ticketmaster. We use the Ticketmaster system here, and it's not optimized for mobile. It's a very clunky experience, and I think that was probably one of the issues we had. We had a low conversion rate. And I think we did a lot of work getting people to the door, but then the door was shut. They couldn't access. They couldn't basically navigate their way through.
We've got a few listeners nodding their heads as you're telling this story, Jeremy, because it's not a unique one around getting the final sale and having some problems at the ticketing system.
Well, the one thing we did, and the advice that we listened to and took, was to try and reduce the amount of steps. And then I've taken a bit of a contrarian view on that, because I felt that if we're trying to introduce new customers to our product, to our stadium, to our club, to shove them straight from, hi, would you like a ticket, to, right, pick a seat on this map, now buy, was too quick. We needed to give them a bit more interest, a bit more knowledge. So I actually added a new step in, just to say, here's where you want to go, here's where you want to sit. If you're a parent, you want to be near the halfway line. If you want to be out of the rain, if you want a covered seat. So just to try and give a bit more knowledge, here's the pricing, here's a structure. So we put that step back into the customer journey and seen a huge lift in people who are using that page, going through and buying tickets. So I think we're actually starving our customers of the information they required to buy, and then we left them frustrated and they walked away. So that was probably the biggest success we've had in analysing the customer journey.
I mean, that's really important. I mean, I think it is the guys at Sporting KC, when I went for a tour through there in 2014, their stadium is specifically designed in that way, in that certain sections of the stadium, one end of the stadium is for the really avid hardcore fan that's going to jump up and down, and the other end of the stadium is more family based. There's even playgrounds and dry areas and things like that. So it's almost like they've taken that segmentation down to a stadium level, and similar to what you just said of sort of giving the fans information to say, well, if you want this kind of experience, sit in this part of the stadium. I think stadium design and that customer experience is getting is evolving to offering that in real life, and not only just as an online experience.
And I think the customers are expecting that now. If they're online shopping, they are offered so much information about products. And I know from our experience that we weren't giving them that information, and it's expected. And you spend all the money and the hard work and the creativity and the resources internally to drive someone to that ticketing site. At that point, you've got to make sure that becomes your key focus to ensure that you're converting those sales, or the early work is great, patting yourself on the back saying we're getting people onto the site, but unless you're converting them, it's not really, you're wasting that effort and that resource.
Yes, I did mention earlier in the interview that we caught up recently in Melbourne, because you are heading down under to come and work in Australia. When do you finish up, and when are you looking to come down to Australia, and what type of role are you looking for?
Well, time's ticking on, so it's going to be end of July. I finish up at the South Sharks. And then the whole family, I'm lucky that I have a girlfriend who's from Sydney. So we're moving our family out to Sydney in mid-August. And the ideal position for me would be working in Clubland. It's something I enjoy doing, but there's great opportunities that I've been discussing with governing bodies, with tournaments. So there's some exciting opportunities. I've got some great experience from the Sharks in the general manager role, not just in the data that we've been talking about, but across the commercial field and hospitality and sales. So I'm quite open. I'm excited. I had some good meetings when I was across and saw yourself and went across to Sydney. It's great to be moving to a country where sport is such a passion. because it's a huge passion of mine, and I'm looking forward to heading out there.
Well, you know, Sydney and Australia, like you said, absolutely sports mad. There will be no lack of teams and opportunities. So send Jeremy a tweet at Jez Butler, or connect with him on LinkedIn. Your LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes for this podcast. But I look forward to catching up when I'm next in Sydney. When I'm up there, and when you're looking for a new role, and look forward to seeing what you get up to.
Yeah, I look forward to it, Sean.
Okay, I'm going to finish off with my Sports Geek 5 question. If you can, some of these people really struggle with stretching the memory banks, but do you remember your first sports event you ever attended?
I do. It was my hometown club, Southampton, football or soccer. And we beat Blackburn Rovers 5-0. I've a strong memory of my father taking myself and my brother along to our first ever football game. And I've been an ardent fan ever since. Southampton have had a few lean years, went to administration, dropped down the leagues, and I and all my friends stuck with them, and now we're flying high in the Premier League.
Very good. And what about your favourite food that you've consumed at a sporting event?
I can't remember an exact meal, but I did spend 18 months of my life in America and had some fantastic hot dogs, and that they have stayed with me. Not the tepid kind of meat produce thing we have in England, but some real flavoursome dogs.
Oh, terrific. First app that you open on your phone in the morning is what?
Currently, it's actually Bloomberg, because I'm checking the pound to Aussie dollar exchange rate. but normally it would be BBC Sports online, just to get an overview of the sports happenings overnight.
And do you have any nominations for who the Sports Geek podcast listeners should follow or read, and why they should?
The one thing I'm going to be following over the next few weeks is Wimbledon, which the tennis tournament, which is starting here. They've been doing a lot of really interesting work with IBM, to the extent where they're hoping to use some facial recognition software to work out who's winning one of the tennis matches this year, I believe. So I'm excited to find out what they're doing. They've got some really good stuff on there of Andy Murray currently, with kind of tour around the stadium. And again, that links in with some sponsorship work with Jaguar, which that's a nice little time to see how that's working. So definitely over the next few weeks, Wimbledon, just to see where they're at and see what IBM are doing.
Yeah, I really do like following the Grand Slams, because they all have a different slant on how to cover the tournament. I love how the Aussie Open does it, but they all have their own different point of view and how they go about covering it. So it's a really good benchmark to see what's the latest and greatest in some of the technology. Lastly, what's your social media platform MVP?
I have to be probably boring, but Facebook is where I tend to, and Sharks tend to do a lot of work, especially with the advertising and being able to segment audiences and grow through lookalikes. So that's where I'm sure as we develop at Sharks, although I'm leaving, there's some good guys still there. There's a journey that we're probably still at the start at. There'll be some other platforms that we'll probably use differently and strongly, but for an easy start, I would say Facebook.
Yeah, it is. It's still my MVP, and it may be a boring pick, but when it's so dominant, that's just the case that it is. Jeremy, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Like I said, I look forward to catching up in real life, either in Sydney or maybe when you come down to Melbourne. Please send Jeremy a tweet at Jez Butler. But thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for your time, Sean.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Jeremy Butler. Please send him a tweet at Jez Butler, especially if you'd like to chat with him or about his work at the Sales Sharks or about his move to Australia. He's going to be moving to Sydney, so it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to the Australian sports market. As I said, I am in. I will be in the USA by the time you listen to this. Please send me a tweet if you're in Chicago, Toronto, or Denver. or in Vegas, where I'll see you. And I'm gonna try something. When you see me, I want you to say, "I like your new Sports Geek shoes." Anybody who opens with that when they see me, I will buy you a beer in Vegas. I know how cheap beers are in Vegas, but I'm going to try that. If you listen to the podcast and you open up with, your new Sports Geek shoes, I will buy your beer on site. And those new Sports Geek shoes are the new Nikes. I've taken my talents to Nike. The first six pairs of the Sports Geek shoes were with my Adidas. And now Nike ID has opened up and given access in the US. I know a good friend of mine, Dan Harbison, who heads up the Jordan brand at Nike, has been long tapping me on the shoulder to get some Nike IDs. So the Sports Geek shoes, the version 7s, are Nike. And if you haven't seen them, check out the Sports Geek HQ Instagram or check me out on Snapchat. I'll be snapping quite a lot over the next couple of weeks while I'm in the US, stepping up my snap game and doing a few individual releases and those kind of things on the Snapchat. So Sean Callanan, funnily enough, on Snapchat. So send me a tweet, send me a snap, connect with me. As I said earlier, check out those Calendly links, calendly.com/Sean Callanan/the city that I'm in, Chicago, Toronto, Denver, Vegas. And you'll be able to find times to catch up. One of the things I just want to finish off in for this podcast, and I'll be doing a panel with the guys at Tradable Bits at Seat. Please, I'd love your votes in for the next big Sports Geek podcast guest. Simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/tradable. Steve Barmer and Shaq and Bill Simmons, Magic Johnson, Gil McLaughlin, David Gallup, Todd Greenberg, Dana White, Darren Rovell, they're your choices. Let me know what you think. I'm going to be really pushing that hard in at Seat to get a few more votes and start that social proof of who should be the next guest. And also I'll be doing some stuff with Tradable in Vegas. Really like their product. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek. You can send me a tweet at either of those accounts. You'll find this episode at sportsgeekhq.com 120, the number 120. As I said earlier, send Jez Butler a tweet and tell him that you've listened. And hopefully I'll be connecting with more and more of you as I'm traveling around the US. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek. Cheers.
Like the Sports Geek podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to SportsGeekHQ.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.